Is the song that they play whenever Thor beats people up? That's Led Zeppelin, right?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our friend Josh Humphrey joins us to talk about Midsommar, the new horror film by Ari Aster. Or maybe it's not a horror film. Anyway.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Oh, hello.
And Nick Glover.
I just took some mushrooms.
So this could be a really weird podcast. But we are also joined by a returning guest, friend of the show, Josh Humphreys.
Hello, and it's... salutations, everyone.
Yeah. Hi, Josh. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The last time we had you on, it was before you took the bar, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you took the bar.
I'm an attorney now.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So congratulations on that. I just thought, you know, for longtime listeners who might be wondering what happened there, we'd like to let that in. But we're not here to talk about...
He's officially our Geeks That Got Attorney now.
He is. He is.
Right. Let's talk after the podcast.
Yeah, that was the
podcast. So, but instead, we are going to talk about Midsommar.
Midsommar.
I'm very excited.
The new film by... Ari Aster.
Yep.
It is a horror film that is set in Sweden.
It's the director of Hereditary.
Yep. It's in Holga. That's the name of their little
village.
Commune. Hold on, we're gonna spoil this.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say. But before we have any in-depth conversations about the movie, we should warn those of you out there who have not seen the film and who care about such things that we're gonna spoil the shit out of it.
We also might talk a bit about Hereditary, director's previous movie, and so like maybe we'll try to keep it light on that for spoilers, but we might slip or something, so there's a lot to compare between the two, so heads up.
Yeah, so just, you know, beware of that. The spoilers are going to happen.
Okay, so Holga, the fucked up cult commune where they end up going, where I guess, as you use Nick's joke about mushrooms, everyone is constantly taking psychedelics as a...
Everybody or just the sacrificial lambs, just the people to bring it in? Was it everybody?
I think everybody is taking it, yeah. Right when they arrive, they are greeted with the commune members, right?
And oh, yeah.
And yeah.
The commune members offer them psychedelic drugs. I assume they're mushrooms.
It looked like mushrooms.
Yeah, boomers, I think they said.
Yeah.
And then they made some, for Danny anyway, they made tea for her.
Yep.
Yeah.
To make it a little
Which
easier.
Mushroom tea is totally a thing.
It seemed a little more... ceremonial as tea, just a little bit, like just like the extra preparation, and I don't know.
But there's a lot of ceremonies around tea, so that makes a certain amount of sense.
We should start at the beginning, though. Really,
oh boy.
Like, okay, so Danny is the pretty much the only woman of our protagonist group.
She is the protagonist.
She is the protagonist. I would say. Yeah, she's a young girl in college whose entire family is killed in a car accident.
No.
It's a
murder suicide.
Oh, that's right. Her sister. That's right. It's a murder suicide.
So,
oh shit.
The movie opens with a beautiful mural. Have you looked at the mural since you've like
no,
watched the movie?
No, but does it tell the whole story?
It tells you everything that is going to
happen.
I figured. Movie,
yeah.
Including in like the first panel of the mural is like takes place in winter, so it's winter and summer basically set, and it presents a tableau, and right in that first winter section is like three figures, I think, their bodies, and they're like, they have like piping going up to
oh my god
right. And you that means nothing in the context outside of the movie before you
I can't
see
believe
it.
I forgot this horrible shocking image of her sister with the tubes for the
exhaust
car, the exhaust tubes under their parents' door with the door
tape
shut, and then the tube in her own mouth taped to her own mouth.
Yeah.
Oh god, it was super fucked up.
That's like the first 5 minutes of the movie or something.
The exciting incident of the movie is Danny being going through the trauma of her family being what is it, a ritual murder suicide?
It's a murder. Yeah, well, it's just a murder suicide. Her sister is, her sister has bipolar disorder or something, and she's untreated, and she's living with her parents. And there's been, there's like some back and forth where it's like, she's like, you won't answer my emails. Like, I just heard from mom. You had a big fight. Like,
they make
what's
it
going
clear
on?
That there's a history of this behavior.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend, who's not a super supportive or great guy, says like, you know, oh, whatever. She's just fucking
you're letting her get in your head. She's doing it again. Like,
the only reason she keeps doing this is because you keep dropping everything and helping her. Like, you're just feeding into her psychosis.
Yeah. Just let it go. And then, of course, this is the time that, that it was serious and her family is dead.
Everyone. That's her whole family.
Everyone. Her whole life, except for her boyfriend, who was going to break up with her, it sounded
that
like.
That night
was probably going to break up with her until instead she calls and says that this thing happened. Mm-hmm. So now they're in that real fun, like, oh, now we're staying together because what is he going to do? Break up with his girlfriend after that?
Like, he's kind of morally obligated, maybe out of guilt, but whatever, to like stay with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, technically morally obligated. Really, he's not, and really, he's not doing anything good by doing that.
I mean, he's the, otherwise she would have literally no one, and she needs someone, as shown by a scene where she is just fucking gutted, sobbing, like incapacitated by grief. Very similar to Hereditary.
Yeah.
When the mom, when the little girl dies and the mom is just like, no, like, I just want to die.
It's very similar.
Like, yeah.
Keening and wailing.
And he does a lot of that in this film.
If I didn't, I would wonder if Ari Aster lost someone or experienced someone losing someone in that way, because he writes it and directs it very raw, and it's very good.
My joke was, what did anthropologists do to Ari Aster that caused him to write this movie?
Who hurt you, Ari? Who hurt you?
Show us on the movie where the...
Because all of Danny's boyfriend's friends are working in the anthropology department,
and they're getting their doctorates. It seems like they're all going toward getting their doctorates. And so one of them, the guy who plays Chidi in The Good Place, is the one who's specifically doing his thesis.
Oh, like, is that William Jackson Harper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They're all kind of going here because of him more than anyone.
And their friend who is like the Swedish, I don't want to say foreign exchange student, but the guy from Sweden who's come to this college, and he wants to take them back for the festival. And I don't remember that character's name, but he.
That's Pella.
Pella. He wants. Oh, no. The Chidi guy, whose name I also can't remember.
Oh, that's Josh.
Josh. I forgot because it's just a forgettable name.
It's really funny. Watching it a second time, they're going through introductions, and I think they go through the introduction of all the people like three or four times on screen.
I'm awful with character names. It's just like that
clearly
guy,
boyfriend. They know that other people are as well.
Yeah.
So they go, and they're going to go to Josh wants to investigate this first. He's doing his thesis on the midsummer ritual of Holga, the small town that
midsummer rituals in general.
Yes, but also specifically the one that Pelle is from. Holga, his very tight knit community, which is definitely not a cult, or at least that's not.
Definitely not an incest cult.
It's just definitely not an incest cult where they're farming out women to be impregnated in a weird way with your mom there gazing into your eyes.
Definitely not the whole community of women helping you fuck.
Yeah.
Is that not how you got your first?
did you read anything about the scene that they are referencing?
Oh yeah.
Oh good. Okay.
Yeah.
So did you, when you had sex the first time, did you have to were there 12 women involved, one of whom was your partner's mother, as she
and potentially your
as
mother
she let, as know. She like cried with her daughter to like
and did one of them push it was, her it was, ass while it was happening.
It was so long ago I can't really remember.
I think you'd remember someone pushing on your ass to help you fuck,
and so perhaps,
I know I do,
perhaps I would remember my mother being there. I think
I know when I want to get railed by a dude who I just met, I really enjoy direct eye contact with my mother the whole time.
Oh boy.
We're skipping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
But
that never happens on this podcast.
Because that happens close to the climax of the film.
Yeah.
But what I love about that scene is how like humorous it is.
It's so crazy.
It is so
the
funny.
The theater laughs. Like at least ours was laughing.
But it's also like a really uncomfortable laughter. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like people were laughing because like something had to give. Like it's funny, but also like it's like it is the climax of the film. Like everything is super fucked up. Is kind of come to.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's just... It's,
also, that's Danny's boyfriend, and they're making him cheat on her. So, like, they're forcing this ultimate betrayal of Danny, who's lost everything and is still tripping her ass off.
So is
and
he. So,
like, and they're all tripping their ass off this whole movie. Like, as soon as they start to... Oh, and it's the midnight sun, so it never gets dark.
Yeah.
Which makes people kind of trip their ass off anyway.
Danny's boyfriend is raped. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's 100% rape.
He's like, tricked. He's tricked into sex. He's
incredibly vulnerable.
And then on top of that, the nose darkness is such a interesting take on a horror movie.
Oh yeah.
Because like usually it's dark and shadows and creepiness and what can't you see in the light? And Hereditary was a very dark movie with a lot of like nighttime darkness and creepiness there. And this being like bright and beautiful and floral and white and
yellow and pastel. And
very, very, very a bleached landscape, you know?
Yeah.
What I really like about the movie is that aspect of it. And I think it applies to it in different ways, both just visually, like you were describing, but also just like what we were talking about before is the movie really spells out to you what happens the whole time. It's very transparent about what's happening on screen with the mural at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's when they arrive at the commune and they're kind of being shown around the place, there's another linen cloth hanging on a line that shows how Christian, the boyfriend, is going to be ensorcelled.
Oh, really?
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
I would like to... there. A lot of the Swedish language is subtitled, but when they first arrive in Hoga, the first people speaking, several lines are not subtitled. I really am looking forward to finding out if they're saying something that gives away part of the movie, talking about the people that have arrived, but like there is some very selective subtitling towards the beginning of when they arrive.
And that might be true, because like Danny, when she's first having her tripping experience, like she notices a group of people that are seemingly laughing at her, and that might be the result of the trip, but are they really talking about her?
Yeah.
Are they really discussing something else?
It's kind of an unreliable narrator in a way.
Yeah, I think when you arrive at the cult, like, well, I think it's all set up for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're part of this ritual that's happening every 90 years. They seem to have this... festival every year or so, but this one specifically is every 90 years.
This is the quarter quell of the Hunger Games.
Well, if you listen to like how their sections of life are like the first 18 years is spring, then 18 to 36 is summer.
Yeah.
Then after that is fall, and then up to 72 before the suicide.
Yeah, and then it's like what happens at 72? It's like, oh, that's right. There's a scene where we get to just brutally watch two people fall to their deaths.
Visceral,
yeah. One lands flat on a rock and is
the lucky one.
The other one is an idiot who jumps feet first. And we see his legs break up into his body, and then he's laying there,
and then they get screaming.
And you're like, I mean, come on, has he never watched somebody jump to their death before?
He's seen it potentially every year.
Every year.
Or no, I think it only happens at the 90-year festival.
So then, why do they do this 72-year-olds any other year?
Yeah. They commit suicide when they turn 72.
Yeah,
so
it must be throughout the year, honestly.
Yeah,
I think he'd probably seen somebody else making that stupid decision, and I don't know.
Either.
I think it's the midsummer of your 72nd year.
Probably.
Like, it seems like this is, like, the yearly, you know...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do it yearly, but then there's this other side.
It just happened to be two this year.
Right.
Sure.
Well, I mean, people die before 72, naturally, or because of accidents or whatever.
Death is what I would assume.
you'd think there'd be, like, a training meeting about how to jump off the cliff.
Yeah. No shit.
You'd think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but everybody who knows is dead.
But also, you know, he gets scared. I bet he got scared. That's the thing, is, like, you know how to dive off a diving board, right? But if it's your first or second time, you still might panic.
It's not like you get to practice.
It. Yeah.
You only get one.
The woman who went first was definitely, like, it seemed like she was psyching herself up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he just sort of like, here I go.
Yeah.
As soon as they showed them gathered cliff. And before they even show them being marched up the cliff, when they show everyone gathered at the cliff, it's like, oh fuck. Like, yep. you again, like you're saying, the movie's very transparent about what's going to happen. It's not, I feel like this was the way in Hereditary too. You're not so much foreshadowed as it is, you just know what's going to happen next. And that kind of anticipatory anxiety really contributes to the horror of the movie.
I do think Hereditary is slightly different because the marketing wanted you, I think, to think Charlie was like a demon girl.
Definitely.
And going to be the focus of the whole film.
Yeah. That is 100% what the marketing was.
But she also dies 30 minutes into it.
When we saw Midsommar first, and that's when I was like, okay, I wanted to see Hereditary, but that's what sold us on it. Yeah. Watched it the next day at home, and when Charlie dies, first of all, it is so like dramatic, and I was like, that has to be a dream. Look, kid's head gets clipped off by a goddamn telephone pole. That has to be, they're gonna wake up. And then no, it was real. And then it was like, oh, my entire expectations of what this movie was going to be just got flipped. Because this whole time I was thinking it was going to be that Charlie had inherited something weird from her mom and her crazy aunts and uncles and everybody else, right? It was very good.
And there's that aspect of it, but of course.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In the film, but it's not as it pertains to Charlie.
Well, it's also, I mean, a hereditary mental illness, like quite a bit in the movie. Right. Like it's great.
The pagan stuff in Midsommar was really cool. Like the maypole, and it was all very much fertility.
Yeah.
The dance is fantastic.
Yeah.
Sequence.
Yeah.
The pole that they're dancing around is very much like cock and balls up in the air. Like the maypole is a phallus anyway, but they just like, went a little bit further and added some testicles.
Like, has anybody seen The Wicker Man?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it reminds obvious comparison.
The good one, right? We're not talking about the Nick Cage Wicker Man.
And I've seen it. Yeah.
May have seen the Nick Cage Wicker Man. I'm not going to say, but we're talking about the good Wicker Man.
I've seen.
Okay.
I think there are a lot of people who have seen the original Wicker Man who would not describe it as the good anything.
Yeah.
I like it, but.
It's another fun, trippy movie, but it's very different from.
It's a bit dated.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
It is dated.
It had a lot. I mean, I hesitate to say trope, but, you know, there is a lot of, you know, the lottery, you know, Wicker Man, this, anything where there's like small community with weird rituals, Children of the Corn, like just the whole like, oh, is this, this is just what this community does. Mm-hmm. This is just their way. And we as Americans are taught to be inclusive and accepting. And so it's like praise upon that nature of us of like, oh, all people are allowed to believe what they want and do their own thing. And all religions are equal under the eyes of our one true God or whatever. Right. And then you're like, oh shit, no. Like what? No, you can't. You're murdering. Oh no.
What I liked about this the second time I watched it, I was paying attention during the suicide scene when they were jumping off the cliff and the reactions from the Londoners versus the Americans.
Yeah.
The Londoners are like freaking out about what's happening because
they want to go.
They want to leave sooner.
Whereas the Americans are like, I guess we'll watch this. Also, I guess this is okay.
Anthropologically speaking, I will detach myself from this moment record it for posterity.
They're Americans and they're anthropologists. I mean, so it's like, it's this thing of like, oh no, this is their way. We accept your culture. Like, we're just here to observe. And the Londoners are like, fuck this. Like, we just met this dude.
Or is it that the Americans are more desensitized to violence?
It could be that too.
There's a lot.
Could be that too, but it's more gun violence. There's violence in British stuff. It just tends to be not guns, you know?
It's, boy, there is right off the bat too, and people are freaking out. Everyone, they're like, no, it's... Like you're saying, the stages of life, and they're doing this willingly. No one's forcing them. This is just our way. This is our culture. Mm-hmm. It's been going this way for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Like,
would you deny us that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stages of their life are pretty crazy too. The like freshman, like young adult stage, the summer age where they're, what is it, up to like
18 to 36.
They're all living communally in like a like a barn with beds around all the walls on the first and second level.
Huge open dorm.
And it's open air. There's no floor on the second floor other than where there are the beds and living space. Like, where are the babies? In cribs in between some of those beds. And everyone just kind of seems to, like, it was very socialist commune, like open, you know, the whole village raising everyone. Montessori cult.
Yeah. Did you get the sense that they were there like year round yourself? Because I didn't necessarily take that meaning from it.
I feel like maybe some of them, maybe not everyone, maybe some.
Just for the festival, you think?
Yeah. They obviously send their youth out into the world.
Well, were they out?
Does everyone go out for education, or do they only go out to like bring people back for this every 90
years?
Yeah,
I definitely think like Ingmar and Pelle were on some sort of Rumspringa.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was where they leave just the commune, like that area itself, or if that's just a broader thing for the community, but they're actually like all over the place.
Mm-hmm,
It is a village. I mean, we don't see a lot of village buildings. We only see like four or five buildings, and you know, one of them's like the murder shack hen house, and one's the kind of temple, and one is the fuck den, and then one is the communal living space. Like, there's not a lot.
Do we see them eat a meal?
Yeah, outdoors at the table.
Yeah. Okay.
There's that creepy thing about everyone waits until.
Oh, and then the cascade of forks.
Yeah, at the first meal they eat together, it's the people that are about to commit suicide start eating, and then it cascades down the table as everyone in a rune shaped. The table is shaped like a rune, and then at the very end, it's Danny who
she's the May Queen.
She becomes
a
May
Queen.
Oh, which it was all, and it had the classic like. My boyfriend went missing last night. They keep telling me it's fine and that he left without me, but he would never do that.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
No, it's fine. And they're coming back. And like, okay. It's like, oh no, she's crazy. They're coming back for her.
I hope when they add, like, when they release the cut of this, that's going to be longer because they said they were going to, like, we get more of, like, Simon and his girlfriend. I can't remember.
Yeah.
The Londoners.
Yeah.
The Londoners. Because I want to know more about, like, what happened to them, if there is any kind of, like, and what kind of, like, maybe Ingmar was telling them, like, off camera. Mm-hmm. I know it's more focused on the Americans.
Yeah.
I kind of know more about them.
Do you think they might show you how he disappeared? Or or just leave that to, who the
out,
fuck
like,
knows?
You figure out how he died. Like,
well, sure.
What
I mean,
did to him.
Yeah.
But you don't really know what happened to, like, cause it, right?
Right.
The same with his girlfriend, because I think you hear her die.
I think so.
Yeah.
Off in the distance. Yeah.
Because it startles all the characters.
And they're all like stuffed with flowers and like it's so fucked up. Like, it's just such a cool
Weird effigies of them all at the end with their skin and stuff, because it's not everyone's bodies. Some of them are,
because Mark is flayed.
Right. And so, like, they take his face and put it on one of the things they burn in representation
Which
of his
is,
sacrifice.
Again, very similar to the end of Hereditary, where all the corpses were, like, put up around, like, or at the end when they go up there.
The treehouse?
Yeah, in the treehouse.
Or is that them? I mean, it seems like that's them and they're kind of alive-ish.
Yeah, it's
or something in Hereditary. It's hard to...
Yeah, it's super
hard
cool.
to say.
It's super cool.
So I really liked Hereditary.
Yeah.
But I loved Midsommar.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see Midsommar immediately after.
Agreed.
But like Hereditary, I was like, I need a break before I see this movie ever again.
Yeah.
Hereditary fucked me up in ways I did not anticipate because of my mental illness history, specifically my history with psychosis and delusions. Like the scene where she's trying to burn the book, the sketchbook, and her husband is like trying to get her to calm down. He's like, you sound crazy. Like, you just need, and she was like, and it's real. And she knows that she sounds crazy and she's trying to communicate. Mm-hmm. And I was like breathing really fast.
Yeah.
I was like starting to well up. I didn't even notice until Nick was like, are you okay? And then I was like, oh no, I'm not okay. Shit. Like, I was so in the scene.
You're very affected.
It was
visibly.
It really got to me. It was very well done.
It crawls right into
your
skin.
She's amazing. She was incredible.
As the mother in that. Yeah.
I
feel like Midsommar might be more brutal overall, but it definitely was less hard to watch.
It's more fun.
It is.
Kind of,
as
yeah.
As cheap as it is, that's, it was more fun.
I don't think it's just the fact that it was, it's very bright and sunny, but also I think that doesn't hurt,
yeah,
really.
Well, like, the closing shot of Midsommar is Danny's face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it slowly breaks into a smile. Yeah. And you're left with her being happy.
Yeah.
And I guess there forever?
Yeah.
Or something?
She's their May Queen.
Like, she's May Queen until who knows when?
She's the queen for at least a year.
Or maybe,
you know,
she'll just come back every year for the festival.
I think she's one of them now because she has that moment of grieving where she does the keening and wailing the end. Everyone,
and they all do it with her.
Starts doing it with her, and they're all like physically supporting her and on the ground, like screaming in emotional agony together. And like when her parents died, her boyfriend did a shit ass job of supporting her and being there for her emotionally. And finally, she gets to have this grief, and she's being supported by an entire community of people. Like, this is her family now.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't have a family, her boyfriend didn't support her, he's dead, this is her family now.
Yeah. And that's if you're talking about this being a cult, mm-hmm. and them like introducing or trying to sway her to the cult, that's when they get her.
Yeah.
Yep. Until that moment, no one has participated in her grief with her.
Yeah.
And because Christian has always been, are you okay? And what he's waiting for her to
say, are you still upset?
Yeah, are you still what he's waiting for her to say is like, oh, I'm fine. So he doesn't have to engage.
Yes.
He's just waiting to be dismissed of his responsibility. Like, yeah.
And I think also that is classic. That is what cults do. That is cults in real life. They prey on people who don't have anyone or who have been rejected by their families. Everything from Scientology down to like Heaven's Gate, right? That is, they prey on people who have no one, who feel alone, to say, you're not alone. You're one of us. We call each other sister. We call each other brother. Like, we love each other. We all wear the same things. We share chores here. We're all equals here. You can be part of this. And that is classic cult. And that's how they get you. Like, the starvation, the drugs, the brainwashing, and then the feelings of acceptance, and that, like, why would you ever go anywhere else? It's beautiful. It's beautifully done. They do this in Legion in this latest season, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And if you haven't
super
been watching
culty.
That, Legion is incredible, and it's almost over, and it's been so good.
It's another kind of, like, hippie cult, but, like, with mutant powers.
Yeah.
It's great. I think, before we wrap up, I really want to help fabricate the flower dress at the end that she wears, like the May Queen gown. I think that could be made by just like getting long strings of plastic flowers and weaving them together into like a cloak, essentially, for a costume for Convergence. Mm-hmm. I think that would be, it wouldn't be too hot. And I think the people that would get it would be like, oh, holy fuck. Oh God, Midsommar.
That seems likely that's what would happen.
Awesome. Yeah.
I would love to participate in something like that.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I wouldn't wear it. You'd be wearing
it. Can we have some sort of ritual burning?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We do that
at Convergence every year.
I would walk around and ask everyone if they'd seen my boyfriend. Has anyone seen my boyfriend? Where is he though?
Actually, I mean, I don't know.
Someone and wear their face as a mask.
I don't know if people knew this, but when people turn 72 at Convergence, they do jump to their deaths from the top of the hotel.
Oh.
As is
tradition.
It's actually better now because the hotel's taller.
Yeah, it's
I'll see if we can knock out a white, like the white flowy clothes that the dudes are wearing, and we can go as a couple.
That sounds great. I'm into it.
I'd love
that. All right, so we got to move on to five questions.
All right.
Josh has answered our most recent five questions. So we have five questions from a listener that Josh will get to answer with us.
Yes. Yeah.
What do we have?
Five questions from Nathan Heavenstone.
Hi, Nathan.
All right. Question one.
One.
Warning. This question is not worded well.
Dum-dum-dum. Right. Is that what Nathan wrote?
That's what he wrote.
Okay.
Well, it's not worded well.
That's his own word.
That's not.
Okay.
That's not a question.
You would never judge. Okay.
I would never pass that shit. Yeah. All right. What is a very popular show that you feel like you would like if you watched, and you understand why it's popular, but for whatever reason, you just can't watch it? And if you know the reason, then why?
Supernatural.
Yeah.
Mm.
Hands down.
Why is that?
It's because I've seen, like, that show. Like, I've watched all of Buffy. I've watched all of Angel. I've seen a lot of WB quality, 1 hour supernatural, multi-season shows. Like, what's the one with the witches?
Charmed.
Charmed.
Charmed is good.
They're all. It's all the same show, though. Like, it's all the same quality. It's all the same level acting. It's all kind of the same. And, like, I don't mean for that to sound dismissive. I'm not knocking it or saying it's bad. I'm just saying that, like, I really love that there are so many incredibly fucking dedicated Supernatural fans. There are people that are really into that show. It will never be something I'm into, and it's not a knock on the quality of the show.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
I can answer this.
Yes, please.
Like, it can be good shows that we want to watch.
Anything,
just
anything,
for
yeah.
That we haven't for any, like, reason, right?
Yep.
So, like, at the top of my list of shows I want to watch but can't quite gird my loins quite to do it is, like, The Wire.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know it will be, like, really emotional for me to watch. Oh. I'll probably push all my buttons.
Yeah.
All the legal stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the,
especially.
Yeah.
And
oh.
It'll drive me, it'll just get that part of my brain working too fast. And
yeah.
It'll get me like
best TV show ever made. I
think I was out of the country when it started and so I never like caught like the bug right away, but that's always been at the top of my list to watch when I
watched it when Nick
it.
Rewatched it and
yeah.
I have a lot of answers, but they all have basically the same thing in common, so I'll just pick one.
Yeah.
And it's Breaking Bad, which I would love to watch, but it's HBO.
AMC.
Well, anyway, it's not streaming on anything that
yeah,
we have.
You have to have cable to stream.
So and we don't have cable, and so I've just never watched it.
Yeah.
I would watch it. I'm sure I would really like it. But
I don't think that would ever come to Netflix or Hulu.
I don't think it would. AMC.
I mean, maybe eventually, but it's not yet. Yeah. And if it does, I probably will still be like, there are other things that aren't as dark and rough to watch that I'd rather watch instead.
I'm sure it'll be on AMC streaming service because I'm sure they're
no joke.
Sure, but then you got to pay for it. And I mean, I'm willing to pay for a certain number of streaming services, but at some point, you've got to make choices.
You're gonna have to pay for 50 streaming services,
I'm not gonna.
One of the best things about watching all of Breaking Bad is that when you're done, you get to watch Better Call Saul, which is the Mike show, which is so good.
All right. Mine is The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh.
Because everyone keeps saying how great it is, and it's so good, and it's so depressing, and all that. And it's like, I read the book. I'm good.
Yeah.
I loved that book in high school. It really stuck with me. I just can't bring myself to watch it. It feels like torture porn. To me, it feels like, I don't know, man. It's too real. And also just kind of like, I don't know why there's so many women who love it so much. And like, I've seen even one of my favorite internet dogs, Coconut Rice Bear, who is a fluffy white Samoyed. She did a series about, they put her in like a Handmaid's Tale bonnet.
Oh, God.
And they did all this like, blessed are the Cheetos and like, under his eye and all this shit. And it was like, so like now we've moved past it being like media thing to it being like funny meme territory.
Pop culture.
It's not funny.
Yeah,
Do you think that women like it because they can like point to it and go, okay, this is it's almost this bad and you don't even see it.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't want to yuck anybody's yum regarding that, but fandom around dystopian hellscapes is really disconcerting.
Yeah.
Agreed. And it just, I want to, like, I understand that it seems great and I would want to watch it because I do have a curiosity, even though, like, I try not to support Elizabeth Moss because she's a fucking Scientologist. But other than that, you know, I don't know.
Oh, I just learned that now.
I'm so sorry.
It feels like one of those.
Fred Armisen got divorced.
It feels like one of those red flag favorites, like a guy who says his favorite movie is Fight Club, but, like, he misses the point of Fight Club.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Question two. What's your favorite Led Zeppelin song?
We were trying to discuss this a little bit beforehand.
Oh, Back in Black.
Oh, that's a good one. I have to go with Immigrant Song because it's the only one that popped into my head because you said it earlier and I'm like, now
so
it's
unfair.
All it's all Immigrant
You can have
song.
The same favorite.
Well, I'm going to
It's you can true. Have a more nuanced version than
favorite.
I am. You're a musician.
No, I'm gonna go. Favorite. Yeah, you, Molly. You're the big. You're the big Zeppelin fan. You name something.
I'm trying to pick. Figure out. I'm. There's so many for me, you guys. Led Zeppelin's my
Jamaica.
Favorite band. I love Jamaica. There's a B-side that I love that I cannot think of the name of it, and that's making me crazy. Hats off to Roy Harper. Took its place on the album, and I'm like, you'd think that would be something I could Wikipedia Google or whatever, but. So I come back to me in a minute.
Okay.
I think, Jamaica, I think.
I'm,
yeah.
I'm sorry to say this. I've never been a big Zeppelin fan. It's not that I don't like them, but I've never gotten super into their music. So
yeah.
I'm just going to go for A Whole Lot of Love because I know that song and it's a good song. Dirty and I like it.
Opening.
Yeah.
Super oh, good. You know what? It's Kashmir. What am I talking about? It's Kashmir.
Yeah.
The thing that Zeppelin has that I do like is they've got really nice guitar riffs
and
really
an
nice.
Obsession with Lord of the Rings. What more could you want in a psychedelic like blues rock band from the 70s?
I don't know.
So brief sidebar while Molly
please while I try to figure out because there's so many.
Will Thor 4 Love and Thunder feature another Led Zeppelin song? What would it be?
It doesn't. Instead, it does Heart, the female Led Zeppelin.
Oh,
the closest woman equivalent to Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
I got it. It's Hey, What Can I Do?
All right.
That was left off Led Zeppelin 3. That's a really great song.
All right.
The chorus is, hey, what can I do? I got a little woman and she won't be true. Like, it's just, it's great. It's a very classic Zeppelin song. Like, oh no, women cheat on me. I wonder why that is. Yeah. All right. I love Led Zeppelin so much. I can't even. I feel like I've got Sophie's Choice here.
Mel and I were talking the other day about Led Zeppelin and how there are so many songs that have that blues influence or straight up stolen blues songs where it's this 19-year-old yelling about how back in his days as a youth, how things were so simple.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you're 19.
19
like,
years old. The opening line of their very first album is, in the days of my youth, I was told what it means to be a man. Now I've reached that age. It's like, reached what age?
If you were born 10 years later, you wouldn't be able to legally drink.
Good times, bad times, you know I've had my share. At 19, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So question 3. Technically, you can vote for literally anyone for president because there is a write-in option.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's pretend that Trump doesn't exist and we don't need to worry about defeating him, if only.
Okay.
Among everyone you know, from friends, family, acquaintances, to people you know through TV or news or whatever, people you're fans of, who do you think would genuinely make the best possible president for the United States? Give one short answer for why, and you cannot use yourself.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't.
There's no way in hell I would say myself. I would be an awful president.
Leslie Nope.
Oh.
Does it have to be from people you know?
Anybody. He says whatever to anything. And I'm thinking
was
a fictional character. I'm going Leslie Nope. I think she'd be an amazing president.
Molly from the movie with the two girls and the party, the high school. There, we just did an episode on it.
What was that movie
Booksmart.
Booksmart. Molly from Booksmart.
Oh yeah, good answer.
She'd be a good president.
She'd be a great president.
Well, or a Supreme Court justice.
I know, but that's the thing. I think
you can be both.
It's true.
She could be the president and then move on to the Supreme Court.
That's right.
Taft did it.
Yeah. Yeah. You gonna argue with Taft? I wouldn't.
I might argue with Taft.
I hate to do this.
Yeah.
But Michelle Obama would make a great fucking president.
Yeah. Yeah,
she really would.
I agree. I think she would too.
I would totally vote for Michelle Obama.
I'm going to pick a fictional character. I'm going to say Lisa Simpson.
Ooh.
Because I want the Simpsons to be right again about a president.
That would be nice.
In a good way.
All right. So question 4. Did you see the teaser for the new Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix?
Yes.
Oh. What did you think?
What was that old Michael Douglas movie, Falling Down?
Yeah.
This is Falling Clown. That's what I thought of the Joker movie. It's Falling Clown. So you know how when you explain a joke that ruins the punchline? I feel that way about the Joker's origin story. When you explain the Joker's origin, it ruins the joke. Like, he is better left as a mystery, as a person who we never know where he comes from. We never know his real name. We don't know why he is the way he is. Like, it's all better left unsaid. You don't explain a joke.
That's why Heath Ledger's Joker was so fantastic. No labels in his clothes, no fingerprints, no one, and we never find out.
Everything was bespoke. Yep.
Really, he just keeps making up his origin.
Yep.
Or maybe he doesn't. Maybe one of those is real, but it doesn't matter. I don't know. I watched it and I thought that I needed to go read The Killing Joke again because I was pretty sure that was going to be better than this movie.
I'm going to see it, and I don't necessarily think it'll be a bad movie.
I don't know.
I'm excited to see it.
I love Joaquin Phoenix.
I just don't think it is necessary.
Yeah, would like to move to enter Nick's response officially into the record as my response.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I personally think that it could be really interesting, but I don't think that I hate the Joker as this like anti-hero thing people are trying to make him into.
Yeah. Because
he's
we live in a society.
It's like he's a fucking villain and he's an abuser and he's terrorizing things. I mean, he's gross. He's a gross character. And when people are like, oh, you're the Harley to my Joker, it's like fucking run.
Yeah.
I'm screaming from that relationship.
Yeah. Talk about red flags. Yeah. Dudes who are obsessed with the Joker, kind of a red flag.
For real, though. Like,
that's kind of a red flag.
The Joker is not a good it's like, in many ways, it's like idolizing Darth Vader. Darth Vader killed a room full of kids.
You also shouldn't idolize Batman for what it's worth, but like that's there's some shades of gray there.
Yeah, well,
For Joker, it's there's this I think it's in Brian Azzarello's Joker, just self-titled, which Joker is not the main character of, but it's all about Joker. Cowering from him, and they're like, "Oh my God!" It's like, "What are you cowering for?" It's like, "Aren't you gonna kill me?" It's like, "Why?" That wouldn't be funny. Ugh. And he just like walks away in disgust. And it's like, man, you don't want like a chaotic, neutral sociopath who's might kill you because it's funny,
right?
Or not kill you because it's, no.
Yep. All right. And I just want to point out that Nathan sent in his questions in early April. However, he asks, question 5, do you have any theories for Avengers Endgame? So does anyone have any theories for Avengers Endgame? And I will say, let's not be dicks about this, since we've all obviously seen the movie now. How about like, what are some possibilities for the fallout of Avengers Endgame and everyone being back, and except for the Cap and Iron Man and Black Widow, and Hawkeye's family.
Yeah, I think so. Knowing the stuff that Marvel just announced at San Diego Comic Con. One of the things that was announced was the first animated series that is in the MCU. So Marvel has a lot of animated stuff, but it's not officially part of the MCU.
Everything's non-canon so
right.
far.
And that is, and it's a, well, and this is sort of non-canon, it's What If.
Oh, I didn't know that was going to be animated.
It is. It's animated, and they have a lot of the actors from all the MCU films reprising their roles as, the voices of their characters.
I gotta stop you, because I was kind of hoping for a live-action Watcher.
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of standing there, just introducing these various what-if tales, and now it's just going... I like animated.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be cool, but I was kind of hoping for that.
I think animated will let them do more and really explore how much the world could potentially change within a reasonable budget. But I think we will get some what-if action that ties into not only what if Peggy Carter got the super soldier serum instead of Steve Rogers. I think we'll probably end up getting that. I think we might get in something that fills in the gaps around how Cap returns the stones and Mjolnir. And that is, maybe what if he doesn't, or what if he comes back as Cap and doesn't go back in age. But I think we'll get to fill in the gaps of Endgame maybe through What If.
Well, and I think too, like this Doctor Strange movie, right? Multiverse Madness is going to be all about what is it? What stone was not returned?
Yeah, right. Was
it the space stone?
Mm-hmm. When Loki walks over the Tesseract.
Well, that one, but then like does Hulk ever go get that time stone back?
Oh. I think Cap returns it. I think so.
Cap returns it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what they say anyway.
Well, yeah, they say he does.
Because I could imagine a bunch of problems causing the multiverse of madness coming from spilling forth from one of the times or one of the stones not being returned properly.
And Wanda is going to be in heavily featured in Strange 2. So, and she's all in the comics all about destroying and creating random chaotic realities.
To answer the question, I was trying to remember about what kind of speculation I was even engaged in before Endgame hit. And I think if you had told me that it was going to involve like a time travel story, I would have been like, time travel? What? No.
I kind of had to.
Travel. I mean, my speculation was they're not gone. Everyone's going to come back somehow. Yeah. They're going to bring everybody back, and then they're going to have to do something.
I thought it was going to be like more finagling with the Infinity Stones and like snapping people back and stuff like that.
Well, for the future, I'm just kind of hoping that for the next Guardians of the Galaxy, we get Thor in there. I don't know if we will.
Almost certainly.
Yeah. Especially since the next Thor is not going to feature the current Thor
right.
as Thor. It's going to be the Jane Foster Thor. Mm-hmm. I feel like
Dr.
there's that.
Thor.
Yeah,
Dr. I feel
Thor.
Like there's the opportunity to use Hemsworth as part of the Guardians of the Galaxy storyline, which I think would be cool because there is a cosmic aspect to Thor that it allows them to explore more than I think they're going to want to with that Jane Foster Thor.
An ongoing right now or recently ongoing comic was as Guardians of the Galaxy with featuring Thor.
Right.
So cool. I think that's entirely likely.
I'm in.
That sounds great. Thanks, Nathan.
Was that
five?
Yeah.
That's five.
Oh, shit.
That's five questions. We're going to remind you, you can send in your five questions to fivequestions@geekswithoutgod.com. Any five questions. They can be super simple questions. They can be super complicated questions. They can be questions about a movie that hasn't come out yet that we won't answer until after it comes out. That's fine. We'll figure out a way to answer it anyway. We just did. But we're down to like only four of them, aren't we, Molly?
Yeah, we only have a small handful.
Only four of them, and we're running low. Send us in your questions, and that way we can continue to hold this podcast.
We have one new Patreon supporter.
Yay!
William Donahue, who's going to get to hear this episode weeks early.
Congratulations!
And if you want to hear episodes early, you can just kick us a couple bucks a month on Patreon, and we'll have an RSS feed with all those episodes for you.
I am a patron, and I get that benefit, and it's great.
Yay!
Have you used the RSS feed, the thing that we set up? Okay, awesome. Hey.
The other thing you get to do is listen to a couple of special episodes we're doing every year. We just uploaded a special episode about a trip we took to the Temple of Ek.
Oh,
so
boy.
If you want to hear about us singing the song of God at the Temple of Ek, the only way you can do that is if you're a Patreon supporter, I believe, at any level.
At any level,
you get access to that episode. So Josh is going to hear that episode, but you might not unless you support us on Patreon.
I'm so privileged.
Yeah, you sure are. Well, you are a white dude, so
it's
there
true.
You go.
It's true.
So that is all we have for now. We're going to let you go, and we're going to talk to Josh about being our lawyer because we can't talk about that on the air. It's
privileged.
Yeah, it's privileged.
I need a $10,000 retainer.
Okay, I guess we don't want a lawyer.
All right,
now.
So
we need more patrons.
We need way more patrons.
You know what
Patreon
they say
supporters.
About someone who has themselves for a client? That's going to be us.
Oh, no.
I'm now switching to lawyer ASMR voice. Oh. And please send all questions to me.
That sounds excellent. Thank you for being on NPR.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
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 Hey, Tim, want some mushrooms?
Ooh, I love mushrooms.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
We forget to have people sign it so often that we just assume that's what's happened.